The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
If you are passionate about food and how it supports well-being and health, learn more. The Institute for Optimum Nutrition has been training nutritional therapists for 35 years on its highly acclaimed and accredited diploma courses. Start your new career in nutritional therapy, one that will make a difference and help others achieve their health goals. Train with the home of nutritional therapy education. Find us online and give us a call or click on the IOM banner on the UK Health Radio homepage.
Hello and welcome to another Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly, founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that supports people with cancer in building an integrative program for their healthcare. My guest on the show this week is someone who has experienced cancer firsthand as well as supported her daughter through treatment. From this, she has much of her own harrowing experience to share, but additionally, she has throughout been an avid researcher looking into any and all interesting avenues that came her way. The sheer wealth of information that she has gathered over the years has recently led her to organise it into a book format, which will be available soon. I'm talking to Anita Gibson over the phone. Hi Anita, thanks very much for joining me on the Yes to Life show today.
Hello there Robin, thank you for having me on the programme.
So we're going to be talking about your forthcoming book, but first, can I ask you about its title, Incredible Truths and Truthful Lies About Cancer? Well, you're obviously aiming to be a bit controversial here. Why is that?
Yes, very controversial indeed. Precisely that, truth and lies, myths and legends about cancer. I wanted to get straight to the point, plain and simple. It's been only too long and we must stop tiptoeing around the truth and face the facts about what's causing cancer, why we are losing the battle to cancer, what is fundamentally wrong with the approach to finding a cure, etc. The title itself, obviously, is self-explanatory to anyone who comes across it, be it someone who is a sufferer or for someone who is curious and wants to find out what to look out for in order to prevent becoming another victim to cancer. By using this title, I thought there's no two ways about what this book is about.
Okay, so it's aimed primarily at people with cancer, but also to people who, as you say, are trying to avoid cancer.
Absolutely, because it's this lack of information or lack of clarity that maybe makes us, in a way, careless sometimes, you know, in terms of nutrition, awareness about stress and you know, lifestyle in general.
Okay, so before we get stuck into discussing the content of the book, would you tell us a little bit about your background, your important life experiences before you got involved with cancer?
Right, well, I was born in what used to be Yugoslavia till 1991-92, when the Federation disintegrated into six separate countries, one of which is today's Republic of North Macedonia. Mm-hmm. I read English language and literature at the University of St. Cyril and Methodius in the capital, and it was a natural progression for me to want to visit the UK and obviously experience that all I had studied and learned about firsthand. And I did more than visit, obviously. I ended up staying. So I've been in the country since 86.
Wow. Right.
As a matter of fact, it's been my base for over 30 years now. I've had a very varied career path. Started off as an English Macedonian interpreter translator for the Home Office in 1987.
Yeah.
Then I've held many professional positions since then, team leader, the screening section of the Home Office, MD of Expo Media Group, based in Budapest, property development company for UK investors, and so forth. As a matter of fact, when I asked my daughter to write about the author in the book, she started it with a quotation by Richard Wagner, the German composer, mm-hmm. who had said, whatever my passion demands of me, I become, for the time being, musician, poet, director, etc. So it's how my daughter sees me, which is very interesting, how she managed to sort of skillfully summarize me in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm most proud of my teaching diploma.
Right.
For specific learning difficulties I acquired at the Helen Arkell Dyslexia Center in Fana, in Surrey. I also completed the prestigious Wingo and Associate Method in neurofeedback brain training, and I became a neurofeedback practitioner back in 2012. The latest addition in professional qualifications is the Rapid Transformational Therapy Practitioner Diploma using hypnosis from the School of Marissa Peer. Now, this is, something that when I came across it, I was just absolutely amazed and astounded by the effect it had on people and how Marissa managed to cure so many different conditions by tapping into the subconscious mind. So that's me so far. Obviously, apart from writing the book and promoting it and researching cancer, which has become my hobby, unfortunately, fortunately, since 2012 now.
Okay, well, that's what we're going to be talking about. Just a brief diversion. Yeah. Obviously, we could probably do another whole show about the therapy that you were describing there. You were saying that therapy is being used to treat physical conditions, but it's obviously a therapy which you put underneath the banner of a psychotherapy type approach.
Yes, absolutely. Obviously, it's the mind-body connection. You can't treat the body without the mind, and mm-hmm. this is one of the problems that we've had with curing diseases, because the medicine really just cures the physical side of things, separating the mind and emotions from it. But more and more, obviously, we have evidence that the mind-body connection is very strong and cannot be divided, it cannot be separated.
All right. And are you able to sum up the basics of the therapy?
Well, yes. Let's just start with saying that I'm a follower, Dr. Lipton. I'm sure you're familiar with
Bruce Lipton.
And the biology of belief, and Dr. Gabor Mate, and Dr. Wayne Dyer,
mm-hmm.
and others who have in many ways have been pointing to the difference between the subconscious and the conscious mind. When I looked closely, it finally dawned on me. I realized what they were saying. You may have the most educated conscious mind, having read tons of self-help books on positive thinking, changing your life, changing your beliefs, perception, diet, nutrition, exercise, but it won't do any good without addressing the mind. I know awareness is great, but by reading and with all the awareness in the world, you will never achieve the reprogramming of the subconscious mind. This is where all the old programs are safely stored. This is where all the old beliefs live and run your life in 95% of the time. And the subconscious mind doesn't learn in the same way that the conscious mind does. The initial programs in the subconscious mind are installed in the first 7 years of childhood.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we learn about our values, love, worth, our belief system. All this is copied from our parents, from our society, from the people we are surrounded by. Thereafter, we learn by repetition. And by the time we become adults, we become and remain the product of our past. This determines our destiny, our health, our progress, our relationships, etc. To date, one of the most effective ways of getting to the depths of our subconscious mind is hypnosis. When I came across Marissa Peer, UK's best hypnotherapist, as she's been pronounced as, I was astounded, as I said. I observed what she managed to do with the most difficult of cases of anxiety, depression, weight loss, addiction, phobias, allergies. The most remarkable, enlightening moment for me, for example, was the realization that the root cause to all disease and conditions lies in the feeling of I'm not enough, I'm not loved, I'm not lovable, and learning that it's not the events that damage us, it's the meaning we attach to those events.
Right.
And we attach meaning we learned in our childhood. So I personally experienced an enormous breakthrough with my own healing, with a cell-commanding therapy, for example. This is where, whilst under hypnosis, the cells are ordered, commanded, back to health. After all, the biggest pharmacy in the world is our body-mind connection. It creates all diseases and cures them too. Mm. So in the year past, I trained and graduated from the Marissa Peer School using her method of hypnotherapy called Rapid Transformational Therapy. This is a method that uses neurolinguistic programming, CBT, and hypnosis, and it really, really works wonders.
Right. Okay. So you're at.
I can talk about this.
No, I can tell you're a big enthusiast. Anyway, that's fantastic.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. No, it's great to have a bit of a summary, though. Lots of people listening will be interested. And obviously, your own success is the thing that's prompted you to want to find out much more and to learn to do it yourself. So that's brilliant. That's the best way to go, of course. Okay. Well, that's great. Thank you very much. So back to your story now. I wonder if you could just tell us in the broadest terms about the period from receiving the shock diagnosis of your daughter's cancer right up to today.
Right. Well, my journey with cancer started with Rebecca's cancer diagnosis. She was diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma at the age of 24, back in 2012. And obviously, one needs to have been on this journey with a child to be able to appreciate the worry, the fear, the pain. The whole experience was overwhelming, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, the problem was compounded even further by my anxiety about treatment options, the possible side effects, and, well, you know, wondering if the cancer would even be survivable. Rebecca was diagnosed at the very late stage of the disease. I must mention that it took the GP and the specialist involved in the investigation of the first swollen nodes almost a year to diagnose. She was in stage 1 when we first approached the doctors, the GP. The first node became visible, and obviously that was stage 1. By the time she was diagnosed and ready for treatment, she was already in stage 4.
Wow. How long was that?
Legal action.
How long a period?
Well, it was a whole year.
A year.
I remember it was August of 2011 that we reported it, and it was 2012, May, June, that she was diagnosed.
Hmm.
As a matter of fact, I'll share this with you. First, they diagnosed her with lipoma.
Okay.
She was then sent for these lipomas to be surgically removed, believe it or not. The surgeons only then realized there was something wrong with these lumps, and they took biopsy, only for this to come back as cancerous. So you can appreciate there was no time to seek alternative routes to treating cancer. We sort of jumped straight into, you know, we were lucky. Rebecca was in the hands of a highly experienced professor at the Royal Marsden Hospital, who redid tests and everything else and came to the correct diagnosis so she could start the treatments. We followed his lead with all the prescribed, everything that was prescribed for her, which was CHOP, chemo, and later on rituximab. It was at this point when I started researching the drugs she was given, the alternatives, the complementary supplement, nutrition, etc. At this point, I discovered Chris Willems. I'm sure you're familiar with Chris Willems from the Rainbow Diet. and Cancer Active and all the other articles written on the subject of chemo and complementary medicine in the ICON magazine. Now, we approached the professor in charge of Rebecca's case and asked for advice, in other words, permission to use supplements and nutrition that could help with protecting some of the healthy cells during chemotherapy or even some supplements that had been proven to complement chemo, making it more effective. And obviously the answer was no. He said the reason for the disease was bad luck, to continue eating what she normally ate and so forth, and to avoid all supplements. But obviously we decided to the contrary. Rebecca used supplements and diet to protect the immune system as much as we could. And while Rebecca lost her hair and had bad days around the chemo, she did very well. She worked part-time as well and exercised quite a bit and so forth and so forth. The professor, I remember, kept warning us that probably the next chemo would leave her in a lot worse condition. But when that never really happened, he even asked me, what's you giving her? And I said, nothing, because I was afraid to say.
Right.
You know, just in case that, yeah, whatever, if anything went wrong, he could easily point finger at me and say, it was you not taking my advice.
Mm-hmm.
So Rebecca's treatment lasted 8 months, after which she went into remission. And this was really a tough time for Rebecca and obviously the family. I really wouldn't wish it on anyone. And as if this wasn't bad enough, the subsequent trauma caused by the fear for my daughter's life took its toll on me. And 3 years later, I myself was diagnosed with ductal carcinoma in situ. In other words, breast cancer, zero stage. The indescribable fear and pain one goes through, the horror the cancer diagnosis brings, the resulting stress, the anxiety for the future and what it may hold. It is this experience with cancer that has instigated and motivated my journey to seek the wisdom and knowledge of others, professionals, survivors alike, as I decided I was going to down the road of, you know, chemo, radio and drugs. So this is where the journey really started in 2012 and is an ongoing one.
So, obviously, you've both been through a lot, which, of course, many people, tragically, are also doing. Not everyone thinks they need to write a book about their experience. So, what in particular are you wanting to communicate to other people?
Okay, so, excellent question, actually. It was the realization, you know, as I was coming across information that I found very shocking, I kept thinking, so many people don't know this, you know, in trying to get to the root cause of what causes cancer, because you can't just take the answer of, oh, this is bad luck,
right,
and try to tell us. I discovered what I just superficially been aware of previously, for example, the role of the likes of Monsanto. And obviously, I was shocked by all of this, and I really felt that, so whilst I needed to communicate this to others, because obviously, as a cancer patient or as a carer, I've met so many people, you know, in different hospitals, if you like, and by speaking to them, they were sort of just following that one route, you know, looking at doctors as gods, you know,
right.
Which, you know, I found that as I was exploring and finding out information that wasn't necessarily the case, obviously, and it was also a therapy for me, I believe, and not many people could understand really what I was going through. And writing the book, first of all, it's all started with loads of notes, and I've had tons of notes.
Yeah.
You know, I never really intended to write the book. It was just after a while when I realized, I go, look, I could really put this in a book.
Yeah.
And actually, that sort of gave me a great idea. But behind all of this, it was a therapy as well as wanting to spread the word.
Right. Yes, I understand. Okay, so you obviously invested an enormous amount of time and effort in research, both for Rebecca and for yourself. Out of all your findings, Nita, what were the most important and what were the most unexpected?
Okay, I'm talking facts, is the use of chemotherapy in the treatment for cancer, for example. When I realized that chemotherapy is really a nitrogen mustard gas, as shocking as this may be, the first chemotherapy agents and even some of the agents that are still used today are derived from the mustard gases that were used to kill soldiers in the World War.
Mm-hmm.
So chemotherapy uses the most powerful toxins known to humans, and these toxins, of course, are being sold to us as substances that can kill cancer cells. But these substances also kill an anaphase, health cells in the body, and damage its organs, which makes the recovery from cancer almost a miracle. Also, the very substances that are being used to fight cancer are cancer-causing chemicals themselves. So instead of eliminating or curbing cancer, we are inducing, generating new cancers. And, you know, when Rebecca was initially diagnosed with stage 4 after a year of investigation, I was none the wiser, okay? And I just followed route as everyone else does, out of fear. Obviously, who am I to question anyone, you know?
Right.
However, when it came to me, having seen it and experienced all that, Rebecca, I decided this wasn't going to be for me at all, so I took a different route.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So clearly you think there's some fundamental flaws in the model of cancer treatment that underpins conventional medicine. So what do you think's missing, or what's wrong with the picture?
Well, obviously, this is all my opinion.
Certainly.
I just want to just reiterate that I'm not a medical person.
Yeah.
I'm not in business of or qualified to give advice. All I wanted to say, my research led me to familiarize myself with medical doctors and scientists, researchers who have turned their backs on the conventional medicine and the big pharma for very credible reasons. So many of them have given large body of evidence to dispute the current approach to cancer, which evidence had been negated. So what I've written in the book is my experience based on evidence that I gained from credible sources, but I want readers or listeners of this program to understand that I am really speaking from my own personal experience. I would like them to take this on board, but they have to make decisions for themselves and not use the book as an advice, because that's not what is done for.
Yeah, completely understood.
I just had to say that.
No, sure.
Yes. One of the reasons why this war on cancer continues and is unsuccessful is that it is motivated by money that is being made from it. As a matter of fact, it's a $1 billion industry. This actually refers to the so-called treatments that are being used for cancer, namely chemotherapy, radiation. Another reason, in my opinion, looking at all the data and research, advances that have been made by somehow have been swept under the carpet, I don't know, intentionally or unintentionally, is the metabolic underpinnings of cancer. The traditional health view or dogma is that cancer is a genetic disease. But what Dr. Warburg discovered is that cancer really is caused by a defect in the cellular energy metabolism of the cell, primarily related to the function of the mitochondria, which are the little power stations within each cell.
Mm-hmm.
The mitochondria were not well understood in Warburg's time. By the way, Dr. Warburg being the German physician and a Nobel Prize winner. So it wasn't well understood in his time, but today we have a much better understanding of how they work. And also in the view of Dr. McCullough, this information is a game changer if the big pharma gave it any thought. Not only to treat cancer, but also virtually every single other disease known to man. And this is because at the core of most diseases, you find mitochondrial dysfunction. And the whole time, they're really going for the genes. You know, this is why they tell you there's nothing much you can do about it. It's genetical, you know, and the first question they ask you is, has anyone got cancer in your family? Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, my statistics that I have on this is that only 3-5% is genes. Mm-hmm. 95-97% of the time is lifestyle. It's really, you cannot go for genes and all for 50 years and more, all the research going down, you know, this path. I think it's just, for some reason, like I said, I don't know whether it's intentional or unintentional. You know, I think this is one of the biggest problems that there is, and, you know, not making any advances in the war against cancer.
Mm.
Obviously something is very wrong if we are using the same method of treatment for 50 years and nothing much changes. Obviously they will try and tell you, oh, well, you know, we are doing much better, and obviously 20% of people are surviving past the 5 years. You know, they've use 5 years as some kind of, well, you know, what I'm trying to say, if you're past 5 years and you've survived cancer and you're healthy now and you have no cancer anymore, which is not true, it's another manipulation, because you could have 5 years one day, and if something happens to you, they will sort of say, oh, that's a new cancer, you know, which obviously people like to believe that once I'm past the 5 years, I'm actually cured of cancer, which obviously in the book, it's explained as to how I come, you know, to this, how I've come around to researching and where I've got all the statistics from. And like I said, truth and lies. So lots of people, like, after 8 years of remission, and they're sort of, they're diagnosed again with cancer, they're told, oh, this is a new cancer.
Mm.
But as a matter of fact, it's not, because chemotherapy never actually destroyed the stem cell. It only destroyed the daughter cells, you know, the cancer's daughter cells. And yes, now they're scanned, and then the scans cannot really pick up. They are sort of sensitive, but not that sensitive. And then we all feel, oh, we are clear. The doctors will tell you it's all clear. You're cancer-free. You're in remission. But nobody tells you that chemotherapy does not really kill stem cells. And it could lie dormant somewhere and resurface, you know, or attach itself to another organ,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then create a new cancer. And then you're told, oh, it's a new cancer. It was nothing to do with the first one. The first one was obviously treated successfully, and so forth and so forth. So there's quite a lot of things that I believe are shocking, untrue, and the truth is manipulated. We are fed all these things, but behind the scenes, there's so much more that we need to know before we can make or take a view and design our own strategy as to what we're going to do and how we're going to maybe treat cancer or approach cancer diagnosis.
Okay, well, on that subject, quite early on in your book, you dedicate a chapter to the first four mistakes. So you've done this presumably because you feel it's very important to pass on your experience of making these mistakes due to your what you didn't know at the time to help others to avoid the same pitfalls. Do you want to just tell us about these mistakes?
Absolutely. I think it was very important, especially for somebody who is diagnosed with ductal carcinoma in situ, which actually means zero stage cancer. As a matter of fact, I will just go and I will try to summarize what canceractive.com was said, that screening mammograms are next to worthless. They do not save lives. In fact, the group of women who have significantly less mortality over the last 20 years are younger women who do not go near them. And also, this is what's been confirmed by a study from Oxford University in 2013. So mistake number one for me, I would say, do not go. I went, for a mammogram. Obviously, I was none the wiser. It was just, a checkup. With my gynecologist, and he said, well, you're in this age, 50, 51, and mammograms, since I researched this, it was the, radioactive, number one. Number two, the way they handle the breast and squeeze and squash, there's so many incidents that they actually burst and spread cancer in doing so. Also, they have absolutely missed quite a few cancer diagnoses. They have completely missed to diagnose, or they have diagnosed breast cancer when there wasn't one. So they've actually subjected patients to biopsies and surgical interventions and all kinds of things. So I think that was number one for me, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is the biopsy. Again, I will, especially maybe there are, situations and conditions where this cannot be overlooked or passed on, but in the ductal carcinoma, instead of, just observing and seeing where this is going, they were quick to sort of say mammogram and then straight away a biopsy. And doctors and researchers have noted that the biopsy of a tumor can cause seeding or spread of cancer cells along the path of the needle track at the biopsy site. Author and health researcher Carl Lauren, I think it was, had documented 73 cases of seeding from biopsies causing metastases on his website, carllauren.com, for those who are interested to have a look.
Mm-hmm.
Another scientist is Vincent Gamil, the center of the study of natural oncology in California. He presented a case of a woman who had successfully treated her breast cancer naturally since 1994. And last year, her conventional oncologist convinced her that she was a fool to refuse a needle biopsy. She now has new tumors at each of the puncture sites. What he said was, I rarely see distant metastases until after a biopsy. And then it grows rapidly everywhere, especially in the bones. And this is exactly what happened to me. Basically, what I was dealing with here was a kind of medical holocaust of sorts, because I had to go through two sets of biopsies because the first one apparently didn't work well. And we all know that cancer does not grow overnight. In many cases, it's anything between 2 to 10 years. So I was at a zero stage ductal carcinoma in situ, and after the biopsy, within 2.5 months of the biopsy, I was in stage three. So how else can one explain this but sort of agree what Dr. Vincent Gamil and Carl Lauren have said, that biopsies are sort of overused where they're not necessary. So they spread cancer, and people need to be aware of this. Going from here, My mistake, the mistake number three, is the use of cannabis oil. Mm. And I'll tell you why. I do believe in the treatment with cannabis oil, and the one that I took was a very good quality. However, I took it rectally as opposed to orally. It wasn't until later that I consulted with a medical group in the U.S. on the CBD and THC ratios and the method that's applied to my particular disease. I had no idea that the idea of one fits all with cannabis did not work.
Mm.
And it's got to be prescribed properly, something people don't do. They just go blindly into it and waste money and valuable time, at least I did.
Mm. So that is something that could be applied to a lot of different things, not just CBD, people try things sort of in desperation, but actually it's a very, very complex area and expert advice is needed about most things.
Absolutely. And just like you said, out of desperation, and then people tell you, so-and-so was, cured of this. And you sort of want to try everything. This is another reason why we go to Google and research and we listen to people around us. That's another reason why I wanted to write the book and sort of spare people of doing that. Read the book, take on all this information, consider them. They're just giving you options and they're giving you opinions, and then you can decide what you're going to do with them. But it's very easy to fall in that trap where you either look at doctors as gods and whatever they say goes,
mm-hmm.
or you do the other sort of, this is why I love the integrative approach. This is what I believe at the moment works the best. So mm-hmm. absolutely, cannabis oil must be prescribed properly. There is one or two organizations in the U.S. that try and do this. But in my case, it was a little too late. I, 2.5 months since the biopsies, I asked my doctor, do I have 2.5 months, 3 months for this treatment? I want to try it before anything else happens. He said, well, yes. But like I said, whilst I thought this was doing something, I lost almost 3 months, and the cancer grew to stage 3. So it's one area that is still very grey, and I think that people must not just rush into that.
Right. Good. Thank
you. Anyway, mistake number 4 was that I was on a wrong diet. And as soon as I was diagnosed with breast cancer, I stopped eating meat. So obviously, people tell you no meat, starting juicing, eating healthy, not realizing I was actually feeding the cancer all the same. I was very ignorant, not realizing the impact diet has on cancer, and I proceeded to creating my own diet. Let's eat healthy, but that doesn't mean it's palpitant. I dismissed detox protocols that were suggested to me initially by a nutritionist and adopted an acid alkaline diet, for example, which meeting people every day of my life with, they're doing the same thing. But in the book of Dr. Nasha Winters, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, she exposed the acid alkaline diet. I found that from this book that it's incorrect and misguided, and I explained in the book why. And if I could turn back the time, I would first and foremost consult a naturopath, not only a nutritionist, but an experienced naturopath, because nutrition can be a cure. For example, I'm on ketogenic diet right now. However, initially, one needs to do a detox, then you need to do the juicing, maybe Gerson, and once you've done that, maybe go with a ketogenic diet. But all of this, somebody's got to really prescribe, look after you. They need to really know it. You can't just, adopt a healthy diet. Healthy diet you know, it's not going to be enough. At least it wasn't enough for me. It just was the wrong diet.
Right.
Initially.
Okay, so a bit the same message with that, really, that you could do with some expert help right at the start.
Absolutely, very much so, at least in my opinion.
Okay.
In my experience.
So we're getting on in time. So I just wanted to, can you maybe briefly tell us, because I know at a certain point after you'd had some surgery, you went, you decided to go abroad for treatment and you chose to go to Germany.
Yeah.
So there's been quite a bit in the news of late concerning German clinics and what they have to offer, both positive, of course, and negative. But what made you decide to travel abroad for treatment? And out of all the many possibilities, how did you choose the specific one that you went to?
Great. Great question. As I said before, once I'd experienced chemotherapy and all the rest with my daughter, I decided this wasn't for me. And what I did, I consulted with a naturopath in London as to what clinic he would recommend, because I was looking for integrative or alternative or something different to immunotherapies and all kinds of things. I was very confused. So I went to an naturopath and he recommended this particular clinic in Germany that it's all described in the book. There are many in Germany and in Switzerland, also a leading one in Mexico, which is called Hope for Cancer. It, for me, was very expensive, and Mexico was a little bit too unstable for me.
Okay.
There was a specialist clinic in Latvia and so forth. We chose Hoofland because it was selected on the basis of experience success rate with breast cancer in my case.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, affordability was something I could afford. It's a smaller clinic. It tends to be one where patients feel most at home.
Right.
In the book, there's a whole chapter on what treatments there are available. And my post-operative treatment, as opposed to chemo, was based on what they call fever push therapy, for example. I think it's very important that I mentioned this.
Mm-hmm.
This is where they inject you with a viral injection that creates fever in the blood, in the body. And most fevers are in the range of 38.8 Celsius to 40.5 Celsius. And there seems to be a built-in limit to how high fevers will go. So we ought not to be afraid of the fever. Fever is helpful at a at a fight against diseases. I was lucky I had qualified for the fever push therapy. Not everybody will, because they obviously run tests whether your body and immune system is strong enough to take something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, they take hypothermia therapy. Whilst it's by no means easy, I was looked after by expertly trained nurses and doctors, and the whole process, which can last from a few good hours to even 2 to 3 days with headaches and things like that, is a controlled process. Another thing that I think I want to really mention is something I didn't have, but I think they have huge success with, is an IPT, insulin potentiation therapy, is one of the safest and most innovative approaches to treating cancer. It's an alternative cancer treatment that has almost none of the side effects, such as nausea, radical hair loss, liver damage, and DNA distortion, which standard chemotherapy has. So it is appealing to patients who recognize the need for chemotherapy, but want to do it in a safer, gentler manner. So, yes, in a nutshell, that's
Hoofland
Clinic in Germany.
Okay, so you're recommending IPT as something worth looking into? And also,
I definitely do. I met quite a few people that had high success rates.
Right.
Of using IPT versus chemotherapy.
Okay. And also the fever therapy that you had, I mean, the hypothermia that people were doing otherwise is a kind of artificial kind of fever, just by heating the body up, but probably not as powerful as actually having a fever.
That's right. It's like a sauna. It's far infrared. What I've actually done since I was in Hoofland for a month initially, And then I kept going back for a little bit of more of fever push therapy.
Yeah.
So you need to sort of say, like, you need to have about 10 within the year. But what I've done, I've got myself a dome, like a hypothermia machine at home.
Yes.
In, you know, it's far infrared. So this is what I do. Yeah, so it's like a mini sauna, if you like. So it just increases the temperature, and you stay, obviously, in the far infrared, you can stay longer because it does not have to be to the high sort of temperatures that a normal sauna would have to be, like 80, 90 and more degrees. And then obviously you can't stay there so, and you know, so long. Yeah, that's what hypothermia is. Obviously over there, it's a special machine and they look after you. It's a different environment, but this is what I've done thereafter.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, well, lastly, I just wanted to ask both you, Anita, and Rebecca, your daughter, you've both been in remission for quite a while now, but in my experience, for people like you who've researched and informed yourselves in the way that you have, remission isn't something to be taken for granted or in any way a kind of passive state. I imagine you're extremely proactive in staying well and doing everything you can to avoid relapse. Do you want to sum up what you actually do to keep well now?
Yes, thank you for this opportunity, because I think it's very important. This is why I think the job really starts. Rebecca has been in remission 7th year running now, and myself 3 years, and mm-hmm. going strong, I have to say. And obviously, everyone is different. What works for one person may not work for another. But we can all agree that major lifestyle changes are in order. So detoxes, diet, supplements, exercise, emotional and psychological well-being, faith, are all part of the big picture, and they all deserve a separate really chapter or a different conversation. Having said that, I'm going to go back to you again. In the eyes of Dr. Leonard Caldwell, not sure if you have heard of him,
uh-huh.
a leading cancer specialist, an authority on stress-related illness, it's more important to identify the root cause of cancer than to remove the tumor, he says. This mm-hmm. is what I really, really believe in. And this is why I'm connecting this to RTT and hypnotherapy.
Right.
You can get vitamin C intravenously 3 times a day, if you like, for 12 days. Your cancerous tumors may even disappear. But of course, they will come back if you never address the root cause, the bad marriage, the horrible job, the constantly making compromises against yourself, the lack of hope, lack of love, lack of self-love. These are really the causes of cancer. One of the most fascinating discoveries, at least for me, at the very early stages of my journey through cancer, was one area of inquiry that is not only anecdotal, like we said in the beginning, but also scientifically proving how mind states affect healing. And that's called, I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce it properly, psychoneuroimmunology, PNI.
Sounds right to me.
Now, PNI has uncovered links between the mind and other major information systems of the body, systems which until recently were firmly believed to be separate. The neuroendocrine system, the brain and the nervous system, and the immune system send and receive information both from within the organism and from outside. They learn from what they receive, and they remember what they have learned. Research in PNI is attempting to uncover the mechanisms that mediate psychological and psychosocial influences on health, healing, and immunity. These links are now proven, and it is interesting to speculate on their interplay and how that influences remission, especially spontaneous remissions, which obviously I read quite a lot about. And
mm-hmm.
also not to forget the new science of epigenetics. Finally, we have a new science that actually talks about lifestyle changes. You can't just depend on drugs. You must take your health, your life into your hands, and you know, look at it, identify the root cause of your disease, you know, exactly, you need to be clear on what changes you need to make. So it's not just one factor, it's not one thing that makes us sick, and it's not going to be one thing that's going to cure us. It's epigenetics.
Mm.
Yeah, there's so much to be said.
Okay, all right, well, look.
But obviously, we only have a little time left.
Yeah, okay, that's great. Well, thanks for summing that up, and well done, you and your daughter, for getting well and staying well.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you, Robin.
So look,
thank you.
We look forward to the publication of your book. When's the planned publication date?
I believe it's going to be within the next 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Okay, very soon.
3 weeks at the most. This is going to be done as an ebook. I'm happy to announce that this is going to be done through the charity Yes to Life. It's the charity closest to my heart. It's what they stand for, which is obviously integrative approach to cancer.
Absolutely.
50% of this will go to Yes to Life. I would like to help, because you're a very rare charity, and I really do think that you should grow and get stronger, and the advice, support, and everything else, education that you offer to people, going to get even bigger and better and more organized. So
great.
This comes from my heart.
That's fantastic. All right. Well, look, thank you very much indeed, Anita. It's been very interesting talking to you. And as I said, congratulations on all your efforts and your success.
Thank you. It means a lot to me, Robin. So thank you very much again. But it's a great opportunity. And I hope it will make difference in people's lives, in as much as they will familiarize themselves with the truth, and that they will make their own mind up about what approach they will take to, obviously, to their cancer or prevention or whatever it is that they're curious about. Thank you.
Thank you. Watch out for the publication of Anita's book, which contains an absolute wealth of information. A couple of things I want to mention. If you haven't already looked at Yes to Life's new website, please do. It's at yestolife.org.uk, and it has a great, fresh, new look and a mass of resources for people with cancer, notably the searchable Life Directory of therapies and providers. And if you haven't already noticed, I am in the midst of a sponsored fast and detox under the supervision of Liz Butler and Sylvia Grisendi from Cancer Clarity. It's called The Big Week Off. There's a lot of social media happening around it, which is designed to be simultaneously educational, that's about the mechanics of detox and fasting, and entertaining, the thrills and spills of my progress on the ground. Look on my Facebook or Twitter feed, or alternatively on Yes to Life's Facebook or Twitter feed, and for more sensible stuff, follow Cancer Clarity. Most importantly, if you can possibly sponsor me, you will help me to meet my ambitious target of 7K in 7 days. That's £7,000 in a week. So either click the link to my sponsorship page in the social media posts, or just go straight to Just Giving and search for The Big Week Off. I'll be back next week with another Yes to Life show, and I hope you'll join me again. Goodbye.